I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about early childhood education. Research shows that the first years of childhood can be among the most critical to a person's intellectual, social, and physical development. We're going to talk about the ways we can provide children with the stimulation they need in those early years. We'll be joined by some great guests: Ted Maple of the United Way of Central Indiana, Connie Sherman of St. Mary's Child Center, and Connie Bond-Stewart of PNC Bank. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about early childhood education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits at WFYI.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've got some great guests today, starting with Ted Maple, who is the Director of Education for the United Way of Central Indiana. Ted, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. Connie Sherman, who is with St. Mary's Child Center. Connie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here as well.
It's good to have you here. And Connie Bond-Stewart with PNC Bank. Connie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
I have about, I think, two-thirds chance here if I just say Connie I will get it right. And I should say, as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Well, I want to start first with, Connie Sherman, actually. Can you talk about why early childhood education is so important?
Absolutely. Every child has a right to be in a safe, wonderful place with wonderful people at all times during their life. Little children need that. St. Mary's, we've had a great history of working with children whose families live in poverty, and there's a lot at stake there. Children in poverty tend to go into school 2 years behind. The gap grows. They enter what's called the cradle to prison pipeline, according to Marion Wright Edelman of the Children's Defense Fund. And that's the destiny unless something happens along the way. So there's some real concerns for children in that situation. What can happen, though, is that research, and probably Ted and Connie will talk more about that, the research says that the child's involvement in a high-quality early childhood program can mitigate the results of the poverty. And so the expectation would be that the children that are involved in a high-quality early childhood program will have great success in school and later life.
And Ted, since Connie sort of set you up, I'll throw it next to you and say, how well do we do at providing these opportunities for early childhood education? I mean, obviously, early childhood ed has been a subject of some discussion at the Indiana General Assembly without much resolution. How well are we doing?
Well, it's a mixed bag, I would say. There are many wonderful programs out there that serve young children like St. Mary's Child Center. But in Indiana, we have a lot of progress that needs to be made. We're one of only 11 states in the U.S. that does not have a public preschool program. And too many of the child care centers, programs, homes, ministries that parents rely on every day, we would say do not meet what we would call basic standards of what we would expect.
What are those standards, Ted?
Well, at the least, a child care program, an early childhood center, should be a healthy and safe place for young children. And because of the lack of regulations for certain types of programs, we don't see that. We see, unfortunately, tragedies here in Indianapolis and around the state too often because of that. As my colleague Connie Bonstura would say, we shouldn't be talking about health and safety. That should be a given. We should be striving for high-quality early child education programs because the research says that's the only way we're going to get the outcomes that we want out of preschool.
Well, and it sounds like actually that was a cue for you, Connie Bonstewart. PNC supports a program called Grow Up Great. Could you talk a little bit about that and then why this is such a priority for PNC?
I'd be happy to, John. PNC, in the early 2000s, started reevaluating all of the various programs that we supported in the communities that we serve across the country and decided that we needed one that had a lot of focus, and that focus took the form of PNC Grow Up Great, where we felt there was not enough private sector awareness and that corporate America needed to get more involved. And as a result, we committed $350 million over multiple years across our footprint in support of this initiative. So the goal is to achieve what Connie and Ted have described, and that is to give every child an opportunity for a high-quality early childhood experience so that when they enter school, they're prepared, ready to learn. They know the basic reading that's required to be successful, so that they don't fall behind the other children, and indeed that they're well positioned to be successful in school and ultimately to come into our workforce ready to be productive citizens with a good life ahead of them and also supporting our economic growth.
$350 million is not an insignificant sum. How are you spending the money? What places is it going to, and what kind of impact do you hope to have with that investment?
We spend it. We actually determine by market how we want to invest that money. So, because each region of the country has their own individual needs. Some, you know, have progressed further in this area than others. And so, for example, in the market I was in prior to coming here a year and a half ago, which was Delaware, much of the money that we spent went into some policy and advocacy work that positioned that state to make a help position, I should say, that state to make a commitment to providing sustainable funding focused on quality education for underserved children.
We are talking about early childhood education today on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Connie Sherman, I'm going to throw it back to you and say we've talked a bit about, you know, we've used the term a quality early childhood education. What are the hallmarks of an early childhood?
Well, you definitely want to have a staff or of educators who are qualified. And that may be with a bachelor's degree or an associate's degree or a child development associate certificate that know young children and know how things should go for young children. In addition, if a family should go into an early childhood center, they should see children and adults engaged. And that would be in very warm conversations. There should be a lot of respect for children that's evidence there. We'd want to look at class sizes and ratios. There are very specific sizes that are known to be better, I believe, like it's a 10-to-1 ratio adult to child for 3-year-olds, 12-to-1 ratio adult to child for 4-year-olds, and then there's a maximum class size.
Or actually child to adult, right?
Yes.
We don't want 12 adults.
That's right.
Child. Okay.
And that, yes, you don't want that to happen. Thank you for helping me.
Certainly.
The other thing you want to see is that the curriculum is appropriate for little children. And there's lots of ways for that to happen. A really high quality curriculum can be come to us in many, many different ways. But you need to understand the ages and stages of children and their development. And so that the what we're doing with children is the right thing to do and the way they learn and that it's to their levels of of what they want to do. I would also say you need to look at the nutrition. You need to make sure that families are welcome and that the practices of the center are welcome to families. Again, like we shouldn't be talking about this, but it should be clean, safe, beautiful environments, and a place where children have the opportunity to experience awe, wonder, and joy.
Well, Ted Maple, what are the outcomes for children that we expect out of these experiences? What's a reasonable expectation for parents and then ultimately the children from that experience?
Well, if the child is in a high-quality early childhood program, we should see greater readiness for school, which may show up in language development and the ability to demonstrate early literacy skills, all the academics that you might expect, but more importantly, we should see a greater social competence of young children entering school.
Could you define that term, by social competence?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We, when United Way started this work, we sat down with parents and kindergarten teachers, and we asked each group to talk to us about how they saw school readiness. And the parents talked about ABCs and 1-2-3s, what you might expect. But the teachers talked about the children being able to work in groups, being able to listen, work cooperatively with other children, and to really be able to get along in an environment with others. And again, we see that in a high-quality early childhood program like Connie's or any of those that would rate in Indiana's past the quality rating system.
And I guess you'd mentioned Connie Bond-Stewart, PNC Bank, that you wanted to see basically an intervention of sorts here so that some of the things were broken out. What are the outcomes that PNC is expecting from this for children? I mean, what are going to be the yardsticks that say, okay, we're having success with this, we're getting a return on our investment?
I think the best measure, it's not a quick one, mm-hmm. is to see that ultimately children, when they enter kindergarten, are on grade with other children who have had a good quality environment, and who at the age of 3 or by the third grade, when oftentimes they're starting to fall further and further behind, they are still able to be successful. And you'll ultimately see it reflected in graduation rates. And I know that many of my colleagues in the business world here in Indiana are highly supportive of early childhood as an example. Eli Lilly was initially focused on high school graduation rates in STEM. And as a result of their own evaluation, they actually have a three-pronged priority around education, of which one of those is early childhood. So, you know, because their feeling was if you don't start at the beginning and have these children at a stage when their mind is developing at a very, very high rate, prepared so that they can go into school and be successful, they're not going to come out at the other end with a high school degree and hopefully move on to higher ed if that's what they want to do.
Connie Sherman, you'd mentioned earlier that that an important thing was an appropriate curriculum. What is an appropriate curriculum?
Well, I would tell you that children learn through play. And it can be...
some adults do, too.
Yes. But that's actually, one of the things I know David Brooks says that children learn from people who love them. So, first of all, there's got to be that very affectionate, wonderful factor there. But children learn through play. We have a curriculum that is Reggio-inspired. It's from Reggio Emilia. The preschool's in Reggio Emilia, Italy. And we believe that children construct their own knowledge. And we believe very much in what we call the positive image of the child, where we believe children are strong, competent, and capable. And we give them plenty of challenges within the work we do. There's some play, but there's some really directed project inquiry type of things that go on as well. You want to see children that have lots of opportunities for choice, lots of opportunities for collaboration with others, like Ted said, from the social sense, and lots of materials in their very interesting things for them to do.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Also would like to say that as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. We are talking about early childhood education. My guests are Ted Maple, Connie Sherman, Connie Bond Stewart. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about early childhood education today. My guests are Ted Maple with United Way of Central Indiana, Connie Sherman of St. Mary's Child Center, and Connie Bond Stewart of PNC Bank. Well, Ted, in the first segment, we were talking really about how important all of this is and so many ways that, individuals obviously reap tremendous advantages from this, but as a society, as a community, we reap tremendous advantages. What's been the holdup? Why has it taken us so long to invest resources then in early childhood education?
Well, we're a long way from the 50s and 60s when every child stayed home with a parent. And the fact is, in Indiana, the reality is that 70% of young children have all parents in their household working, and they need to be somewhere. And about 120,000 children are spending time most of their days in 1,300 licensed, unlicensed childcare programs around the state. And I think it's taken us a while to realize that taking care of our young children and educating our young children is a shared responsibility. Sure, parents, it starts with parents, it starts in the home, but we can't ignore the research in that shows that these earliest years offer a window of opportunity for us to invest our resources, time, and attention, because when that window closes, we miss that opportunity, and we're seeing the repercussions in school and down the road.
Well, and why has it taken us so long? I remember in Frank O'Bannon's first State of the State address when he was governor, he focused, I think, a large slice of that speech to the importance of investing in early childhood education, making many of the same arguments I've heard here, that, this is a critical time in the development of young people. We're going to reap tremendous benefits on the back end, but it didn't go anywhere. What's been the problem, and are there any signs of hope now?
I think there's a lot of promise. I think just this year we've seen a lot of attention from the media, from policymakers, from leaders in our community, from businesses like PNC and Eli Lilly that are speaking out about this issue, that we can't ignore these early years or we're not going to have the workforce that we desire. And so it's promising in that. But, I think public will is one thing. I think the recognition that it's going to take an investment, and it takes an investment now that you may not see for years to come, but that investment will pay off. There's been a multitude of studies that have shown if we invest $1 in a program like St. Mary's, we'll get $7 down the road, and that's been shown time and time again. But the caveat is it's got to be high quality, so we need to make sure that if we invest our resources, that it's got to be in a good place that shows the kind of results that we want.
So there's got to be some regulatory oversight as well.
Absolutely.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Connie Bond Stewart, obviously, it sounds to some degree like PNC with a $350 million, $350 would be somewhat less impressive, $350 million investment in this issue, to some degree was stepping into a gap here. And you'd mentioned in Delaware, obviously, the money had been spent to some degree trying to push, you know, the state to do what you perceive to be the right thing. Are there differences in the way you're approaching the problem here in Indiana, and in what ways?
I would say there are similarities more than differences. You know, the initiative in Delaware was led by the business leaders as well as the governor, who ran on the importance of high-quality education, starting with preschool, and who really believed in it. And many, many community leaders, United Way Success by Six, has been engaged across the country in early childhood, and just as they are here. They surfaced immediately when I arrived in Indiana, and we engaged in conversations about how we could work together to further this issue. And fortunately, Cummins Engines, another one in Columbus, Indiana, has invested directly in that initiative. And it's something that not only do we as business leaders believe in, but our employees get it too. PNC encourages our employees to volunteer up to 40 hours a year, paid time off, in early childhood centers. And they're rewarded in the form of matching grants that go to those centers that they have devoted their own time to. And it's very, very personally
rewarding.
How does
that matching program work? I mean, how much for...
If for up to 40 hours a year, then they can generate a grant of, I believe it's around between $1,000 and $2,000 to the center. And actually, St. Mary's has been a beneficiary.
Connie Sherman is nodding her head here,
yes.
So I'll let you pick up the strand.
It's a pretty incredible situation. I will say, even as I left my office today, I was able to talk to two PNC volunteers who were in and very much involved with the children that we serve. And so many things happen when you have people like that come in from the community. They bring so many things to the children. It also allows the children to get more attention. And the thing that I always talk about that I think is very interesting is that sometimes that person is just the one that child needs to bring what they need forward. And I always say, when you're a volunteer, you never know who's waiting for you. But PNC sends wonderful people, and they support us in many ways, sometimes on our committees and as thought partners, and they're always available to us, and the children absolutely love them.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Your question, please.
Not a question as much as a comment. One of the things that you asked was, what do you think, why do you think that this is kind of so slow to come along, this awareness of how important early childhood education is. Speaking for myself as a parent, I can tell you that I think up until recently, because of the media attention, I don't necessarily know that parents as a whole understood how critical it is. I have two children. One, early on, was in a very standard daycare type of situation. And my daughter had the opportunity to go to, and I wish I would have known it was there when my son was going through this type of phase. She went through a program here in Lebanon called Love and Learn. It's run by Susan Norris. She has an education background. And she really gears her curriculum to the early education, the early childhood education concept, as well as the teachers that she hires are very child-centered. The children learn from people who love them, and the children really can tell that these teachers care about them, so they're that much more motivated to learn. My daughter came out so much more ready for school, as well as all of the kids in her classes, actually, I can tell you that because I also substitute teach, came out so much more ready for school than my son, or for that matter, some of his peers, that did not have the benefit of an early childhood education. So I think some of it is getting that word out there, getting, you know, the media exposure, getting the studies out there that show the evidence of graduation rates.
And let me, Kathy, that actually, I think that is something we need to talk about here. Thank you very much for the call. I really
Not
appreciate
a problem.
It. Thanks.
Thanks.
Right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Ted Maple, is that part of the challenge, is getting parents to understand how important this is?
Certainly. At United Way and our partners, we recognize it's not just about increasing the supply of quality early childhood education, but it's also about increasing demand. And because of that, we started a new campaign this year called Kids Need Quality. And it's a multimedia campaign with a website, kidsneedquality.org, that encourages...
You can give the website again in case people kids didn't
need,
have their pencils ready.
Thank you. It's kidsneedquality.org. And with this website and these tools, we're encouraging parents to ask the questions they need to ask when they go to visit an early childhood program. Certainly, you want a safe and clean program, but you want to look deeper. And in the state, we have a wonderful quality rating system called Path to Quality. It's a four-level system, four being the highest. A program like Connie's is rated at level four. But we really encourage any parent, when they're taking their child to a child care center or preschool, to look for a Path to Quality insignia and ensure that, at the very least, that program is at level one. But the higher you go, the more you're going to get out of that investment of time and resources.
What sorts of questions, Ted? I'll start with you. If I'm a parent and I'm looking at a preschool situation, what sort of questions should I be asking of the people there? Aside from looking for that sticker, what are the things that are specific? Because I'm assuming, you know, that St. Mary's, as you say, is a four. There are probably other fours, but they differ in emphasis and bring different things to the table, different strengths.
You know, I hate to say this, but as a parent, you want to ask a question about supervision. You want to ask the types of questions that can assure you that children will be supervised at all time. And that starts with, as was mentioned earlier, adult-to-child ratios. We saw a couple of tragedies in the past where kids will wander off because they're not well supervised. There's too many kids per adult in a program. We heard legislators tell of a visit to a child care program where there were 56 kids being cared for by two adults. And that's on the extreme. But how can children be supervised and cared for, let alone interacted with and taught in that environment? So they need at least be supervised. As Connie mentioned, you want to know about your teacher's credentials, what training they've had, what kind of curriculum is being offered, and just watching for those interactions that Connie mentioned while you're there.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. Joan, welcome to the program.
I am a proud mother of a young lady. My daughter's 27 and working in the industry. I try to talk her out of it because I said, as an early childhood education provider in a daycare environment with a private company, that she would never be able to live on her own. And she lives on a very thin budget, but making $9.50 an hour to be responsible for the health and education and welfare of those young, bright minds that she's teaching is a struggle. And how are we going to continue to grab those young people into the industry who have the thirst to do that work when the compensation is so low that we're not going to get the quality minds there? She has been benefited greatly by the Teach Scholarship program and furthering her own education, but she works hard. She gets up early and gets there so parents would have the be able to be responsible employees, and I'm so proud of her, but I just don't see that there's going to be enough of those kinds of people in the industry, and how are we going to continue to pull them in?
Good question. I'll see if we can get an answer for you. Well, Connie Bond-Stewart, I think I'll start with you. Do we need to invest more in finding and retaining good people? And I've got a follow-up to that that I'm going to throw to all three of you, but please.
You know, there was an interesting article called Capitalists for Preschool that was published by the New York Times on March 1st, and it was written by John Pepper, former chairman of Procter & Gamble, and James Zimmer, former chairman and CEO of Macy's. And they made the point, and I agree with it, that you don't necessarily have to invest more, but if you're, what you need to do is look, reevaluate how you are investing and make sure that you are directing the resources to exactly the kind of high-quality centers that we are talking about. You know, there needs to be the funding that is out there now, and currently I think it's around, is it $27 million annual payments, Ted, that are coming in for some of the programs in federal funds primarily. There's no oversight. There's no requirement as to what the quality of care is for those dollars that are currently being spent. And so I think that's where we start. And we try to identify other areas where we might be able to reallocate funds because, you know, one of the reasons that this is so important is this would alleviate future needs for remediation, including things as sadly, as sad as it is to say, as prisons. So, you know, for there have been some studies, one being the Prairie Preschool, that says for every dollar we invest, the return can be up to $17. And so those, you know, arguments, which are well documented over decades, I think bear weight. And I think it's worth our public leaders focus on reevaluating how we're spending to see if we can redirect the dollars to quality education, and I agree with you. High quality providers should be compensated for their skill and their dedication.
Well, Helen, I mean, my follow up on this was really, you know, we've had decades now of understanding how we prepare teachers in a, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school environment, because we're still relatively new at focusing our attention on early childhood education. Is the preparation for the teachers there? Do we have the support systems to get them ready? I'll start with the one who's doing it, Connie okay. Sherman, on that one.
You know, the thing is that a number of the teachers that work for us have bachelor's degrees, so they've been in a college education preparatory school. And the thing is, it doesn't matter because even at that, because of the demand or lack of demand for quality and for those types of teachers, they still make less than mm-hmm. they would if they were teaching in public school.
Oh, I think the way I'm going with this, though, is yes, they've gone through basically an elementary ed curriculum, but is that curriculum the right kind of preparation for the challenges that you face, or do we need to figure out a different way to prepare people for these challenges?
I think that it's really important, and we believe this is that the early childhood values and education piece is there for the teachers that work with children, not just the elementary.
Okay, and which pieces are those? Ted Maple.
And the caller mentioned the TEACH scholarship. We have we do some things right as a state with early childhood, and one of them is we invest in programs like TEACH, Teacher Education and Compensation Helps, where if you are a full-time early childhood educator, you can qualify for a scholarship that pays for 80% of your schooling to receive a child development credential or associate's degree or even bachelor's degree in some cases. So that there is this issue where we're paying, as the caller said, teachers who care for our kids less in some cases than parking lot attendants. Mm-hmm. And that's a real priority issue that's really got to be figured out. And until early childhood education is seen, until we stop thinking of education as a K-12 system and thinking of it more as a pre-K-12 system and start understanding that early childhood is part of education, that'll continue.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. My guests are Ted Maple of United Way of Central Indiana, Connie Sherman of St. Mary's Child Center, and Connie Bond-Stewart of PNC Bank. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about early childhood education today on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. And as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Well, we've gotten a tweet from a listener that actually is right on that point that says, can the panelists discuss their beliefs and the research regarding the relationship between pre-K programs and graduation rates? We've talked about that a fair bit already, but if we could cite some of the numbers, and I think Connie Bond Stewart, you're the one who seemed to be able to reference that stuff the most quickly.
Well, one example being that I can take from this recent article that was published by John Pepper and James Zimmerman was that in Greater Cincinnati, for example, Success by Six there raised the proportion of children tested as ready to learn upon entering kindergarten from 57% to 57% from 44%. And
Repeat that. That's
okay.
A significant swing.
That was, they tested children as ready to learn, ready to read, I should say, upon entering kindergarten, to 57% from 44%. That was in the 2006-07 academic year. And of those children, 85% still read at or above age level at the end of the third grade. That compares that 85% ready to read at or above age level at the end of the third grade compares to only 43% of the children who do not test as ready to read when they start kindergarten. So that's a significant increase in performance. And, you know, if they're on grade at the third grade, then there's a good chance that they'll stay on grade to graduate.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. We've gotten an email from a listener named Kane. You can email questions to us by sending them to nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, I have thought about home education. How does home education figure into what you have been discussing? I'll throw that one to Ted Maple first.
Well,
Connie Sherman says good.
early childhood education, the tenets of what we're talking about, can happen in a multitude of environments, and that's what's wonderful about it. So there are great early childhood education programs and centers and churches and homes. And as a parent, I think we can learn from what the research says about the importance of interacting with your child on a regular basis, even from infanthood when they can't talk back, reading to your child every day, ensuring the child has multiple experiences, whether they're in a classroom or not, with other kids in order to gain those social competence skills that we discussed earlier.
Kimberly, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. A question, please.
I really didn't have a question. I was going to make a comment. My doctorate is in reading literacy, and I've worked with many school districts, and one of the things that you mentioned about what kindergarten teachers look for, I've found that when local preschools and kindergartens or elementary schools have a communication line and they regularly meet, I've seen some meet about once a month or once a quarter, when they regularly meet, that the preschools become more aware of what the kindergarten teachers and the curriculum really calls for in those students. And I've just found that, you know, preschools vary widely and the curriculum varies widely. And really sometimes preschool teachers maybe push some academics that kindergarten teachers really aren't looking for and aren't necessarily developmentally appropriate. So I was just making a comment that communication between schools and local preschools really helps, I think, the curriculum and the teaching within those preschools be better.
Thank you very much for the call, Kimberly. Well, and I will throw that one to Connie Sherman first. Is there, would that help the process? And I think I'll throw it actually to all three of you right now, because this is relatively new. Have we done enough to make sure that the communication and really the planning that goes into this are as seamless as they should be from preschool all the way through graduation, since that seems to be the ultimate goal?
I think there's work to be done, for sure. I think what I really enjoyed her comment, because what I was thinking that she was going to say, and we've heard this before, is that in the conversations that, you know, the preschool teachers should be doing more to have them more academically ready, rather than to understand that that's not the requirement that we might think it is. And I think that was a really true statement.
Well, and I'll toss the other thing back. Ted Maple, are we doing enough right now to make sure that this is an integrated experience for children all the way through?
We certainly could be doing a lot more. And I think the caller's point about ensuring that there's a conversation between the senders and receivers, if you will, of kindergartners are on the same page. We are excited about the fact that there are preschool standards for early childhood programs that all early childhood programs, if they're at the higher levels of past equality, must follow in their curriculum, and those standards align with K through 12 standards. So we know that there's some continuity there, but it doesn't replace, like the caller said, those conversations, not just about what to expect of kids when they come or how to share ideas and become aligned in what you do. But I'm sure, as Connie will have seen in her program, if a teacher, a preschool teacher, can talk to a kindergarten teacher about a child, then that can go a long way to that kindergarten teacher being successful with that child, particularly if that child is having struggles like many of the kids from St. Mary's do.
Right. Well, and I will toss it to Connie Bond-Stewart, too. In terms of ways that we could facilitate, a more integrated approach, is there a recommendation you could make? Are there things that with the Grow Up Great program that you're doing to facilitate those kinds of conversations?
I really think that's up to the individual states to address, but it definitely should be part of the continuum, as Ted said. I mean, you should be evaluating these children when they come into kindergarten to see how they are positioned to be successful at, K through 12. And the standards, as Ted said, are out there, but nobody is really holding the centers accountable or measuring them.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Jane, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your question, please.
I'm a grandmother of a 3 and 5-year-old children, and I'm a retired teacher of music, and I've worked in early childhood. I am kind of surprised that there's been no mention of the Early Childhood Association of Educators, that there are a lot of very professional and loving teachers out there in the field, both in public and private schools. So that was, I was wondering what the guests would say about that. And also, I just think the emphasis, the importance of music and movement in these early childhood education programs is very important.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Jane.
Yes.
Well, we have not mentioned the early childhood, and could, real quickly, Connie Sherman, could you describe?
Sure. Jane, we should have mentioned that, because I sit on the board and Ted sits on the board of the Indiana Association for the Education of Young Children, and that is a member group of educators, early childhood educators across the state, that belongs to a national group, the National Association. And yes, they're, in fact, they're the ones that brought the TEACH scholarship to Indiana. So yes, there is a very strong group of early childhood educators that exist in this state. The music and movement, it needs to be there. In our school, we believe children have 100 languages. So music, movement, arts, drama, theater, all of that is incorporated in the work that we do.
Well, and are there breakdowns? I mean, I'm the father of a daughter and a son who are beyond, you know, the preschool era, but we learned very quickly. You know, we tried to raise our children without gender distinctions and all of that, but realized that some of this stuff is just hardwired, that if, you know, we gave our daughter a doll or whatever, she would begin to dress it up and all of that. If we gave it to our son, he'd use it to, you know, to thump something with or pound something. And we found that also the approach to getting them ready was different, that the movement, for example, was much more important to my son than it was mm-hmm. to my daughter. Do we need to be more sophisticated about those sorts of understandings,
Connie
Sherman?
Yeah, I think that those things, we need to understand that children have 100 languages and not just the ability to fill in a circle on a test or raise their hand. And I think those things should be there for children in all aspects. And particularly, it's interesting, children who have some language delays or speak another language, these things allow them to communicate in all kinds of ways that doesn't have to be through that spoken language.
We are talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
I've been listening, and I heard one of the women that called in talk about her daughter works at a daycare, and she doesn't make very much money. I have a 3-year-old in a Christian daycare in Avon, Indiana, and we've kind of heard, you know, how much some of the people make to work there, and it's shockingly low. I mean, considering, you know, we're asking these people to supervise our children and teach as well, and you know, as the children start to get older, the system requires less adult supervision per child, which, you know, isn't helping. But I'm wondering if the program that you're talking about would raise the cost of the daycare program. I mean, I'm paying almost $9,000 a year in daycare, and we could afford maybe, you know, a little bit more, but it certainly doesn't help that they're not even going to allow us to deduct the money we spend on our daycare now, you know, from our taxes. Do you think these programs you're talking about are going to raise the cost of daycare?
We'll try to get you an answer, Tom. Ted Maple, thank you very much for the call, Tom.
That's a big question.
It is a big question.
So it is an issue because we already addressed the problem of child care teachers and early childhood professionals being paid at too low a rate, but parents, as the caller stated, are paying more for child care in some cases than they are for college tuition. So I think what we need to make sure is that, like Connie Bond-Stewart mentioned, that the state is helping in ways that are smart and ways that make sense.
And what might some of those ways be?
So right now we have a program in our state, every state does, called the Child Care and Development Fund Voucher Program, CCDF. And those vouchers are available for families that are low income and working or going to school full time. And they can take that voucher to help offset most of the cost of child care. But we believe those vouchers should be limited to programs that are high quality. And right now they're not. As Connie mentioned, the $27 million the state spends on child care vouchers in unlicensed child care, it can certainly be better spent if we put some strings attached to those vouchers and made sure that certainly family needs help paying for this so it's affordable, but it also needs to help offset the cost to run a quality program.
Well, and I want to just ask here, if there is one thing we could do right now, at the legislative level or wherever, to improve the quality of and, you know, the level of early childhood education in this state, what would it be? I'll start with Connie Bond-Stewart.
Well, there are a couple bills right now before the House and the Senate, and Ted is much better versed in the particulars of those bills than I am. They frankly are very small steps, but they are steps forward to start to address the quality and how we're spending the money that we are already spending in this state on early childhood. So I think we start by encouraging our representatives and senators to support these bills.
Ted, would you talk about those two measures?
Absolutely.
Please?
So one bill is Senate Bill 305, and it was co-sponsored by Senator Taylor and Senator Holdman. And what it would do would put additional requirements on child care programs that are receiving these CCDF vouchers. Right now, there's very little. It would add extra regulations to those. We think it should add more. We think it should include ratios. But right now, it at least would require a child care program to go through a full criminal background check, limit the number of children it can put in a facility, and some other important things. The other bill, House Bill 1004, is sponsored by Representative Boehning, and it is a priority for the House Republicans, and it's passed through the House. So please thank your representative. What it does is it would start a preschool pilot program, and these preschool pilots could be in schools and high-quality child care programs, anywhere that meets quality standards. So these are both good first steps, as Connie mentioned.
Well, and Connie Sherman, I'm going to reframe it ever so slightly for you. What is the thing we could do that would most help you in performing your job with young children?
It's funding. It's a matter of funding and allowing us to hire the best people and make sure that I think we've had some strategic planning done. And when we got done at the end of the day, all the things we talked about, our board of directors actually said it would be teachers' pay that we would look at because that's what most impacts children, who they spend their time with and who loves them, they love.
We have been talking about early childhood education here on No Limits. I'm afraid we're going to give the educator the last word, which is always a good idea. I want to thank you all for spending this time with me. I want to thank my guest, Ted Maple, who's the Director of Education at United Way of Central Indiana. Ted, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
Certainly good to have you here. Connie Sherman, who's with St. Mary's Child Center. Mm-hmm. Connie, thank you for spending this time with us.
Oh, thank you.
It's been very good to talk with you. And Connie Bond-Stewart of PNC Bank and the Grow Up Great program, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about insights into the Muslim world. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.